The moments of our lives are opportunities to learn something valuable about ourselves. Instead, we often take them for granted and waste them on negative, unproductive thoughts. Mindfulness keeps us present and aware. It provides a pathway to experience an expansiveness that gives us a feeling of oneness with the world. A daily mindfulness practice allows us to show up and experience all the moments of our lives as present, as accepting, and as real as we can be. Our guest today, and this is her second time on this program, is Aura Natrick. Aura is the founder and president of the Institute for Transformational Thinking and author of Live True, A Mindfulness Guide to Authenticity. Aura is a certified life coach and mindfulness teacher. She specializes in transformational thinking, self-discovery, and mentoring new coaches as they develop their careers. It's great to have from California today. Nora, how are you doing?
Hi, Wynn. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing great. Thanks.
Okay. Your new book is called Live True, A Mindfulness Guide to Authenticity. And 90% of my listeners won't know what you're talking about. So could you tell them what mindfulness is and authenticity?
Okay. Well, first of all, mindfulness, I know that it's really gotten into the mainstream, and I'm very excited about that. You know, when we hear these words come up in the media and we read about it and see it, and even though it's explained to us, I think there are many people who go, I don't really think I know what that means, because they maybe haven't experienced it. And the way in which we really get to know something well is by experiencing it. So I want to say about mindfulness, although it's a 2,500-year-old concept that was believed to be practiced by the Buddha, it is in fact a quality that is inherent in each of us, meaning that we all have the ability to be mindful. We all have the ability to be the definition of mindfulness in the present moment with total awareness. And so we can take that even further. What does it mean to be in the present moment with total awareness? It means that we are showing up in the moment that we're in, and that we are really there in it. We are present, we are aware in it, we are awake in that moment, and we are giving our self undivided attention to this moment, and we are as present as we can possibly be. So that's really the description. That's the definition, is to be present in your life, in the moments of your life, with total awareness and acceptance. And I always say to put the cherry on top of that sundae is with self-love.
Okay, so would it be fair to say that mindfulness is like paying attention? So if you drive to the store and you get there and you can't remember anything that you saw along the way, you wouldn't be mindful. But if you knew what was going on around the street and everything, paying real attention, that would be mindfulness?
Absolutely. And it's so great to be able to really give specific examples of it so we can kind of demythicize it and take the, you know, the mystery, if you will, off of it. Yeah, it's like if you give it the metaphor of a lens of a camera, and if you're going to take a picture, you want that lens to be very clear. You don't want it to be fuzzy. You don't want it to look like it's got Vaseline on it. You want it to be crystal clear so that you can take the picture of what you're looking at as real as it appears to be, do you know? And oftentimes we're not only half present, We're not really looking. We're not really seeing. We're not really listening. And I say about mindfulness, it also optimizes our senses. It makes our senses feel so much more alive so that we listen better. We taste our food better. You know, mindfulness has been applied to just about everything. Mindfulness eating, mindfulness walking, mindfulness parenting. You know, if we are present in all that we do, we are so much more aware of what we're doing. That means we're more aware of what we're saying. We're more aware of what we're hearing. We're more aware of our behavior. We're more aware of how we're speaking. You see how it starts to really spill over into all the areas of our life. And it's a gradual thing, you know. You don't have to have, a blast of awareness all at once. You know, if you practice mindfulness daily, here's what you're going to start to see. You're going to start to see more. You're going to start to feel more awake. You're going to start to feel more aware. And that's, to me, such a gift.
Well, Aura, what does it take for a person to decide or to become more mindful? Do they just say to themselves, starting today, I'm going to be aware of everything?
Well, that's a beautiful thing to say, and that's what we would call an affirmation, do you know, which is good to do. It's good to declare what we want to create and what we want to accomplish, be it our goals or our desires. And that's a great positive thing to say to yourself. But if for somebody who's saying, look, walk me through this, what do I have to do? I would say just start with first declaring that to yourself. I want to be more mindful. I want to be more present in my life. I want to show up for the moments of my life with appreciation. You know, if we show up for the moments of our lives, you know, which really kind of circles back to my first book, Says Who, when we're negative, you know, then have the awareness of being negative. That means you're mindfully aware of telling yourself negative things. So you may not wake up feeling 100% positive, but if you make an effort when you wake up in the morning and say something like, you know what, I'm going to choose to be more present in my life. That means I'm going to choose to be more kind to myself. That means I'm going to choose to not rush out of a moment. That means I'm going to choose to be really thoughtful in the way I speak to my partner today. You know, give yourself these mindfulness goals, if you will, and how you can best apply them for that day. You know, start, what I say, one thought at a time, one moment at a time, one day at a time.
Okay, so the subtitle of your book is A Mindfulness Guide to Authenticity. Now, what is authenticity, and how does mindfulness help you become more authentic?
Well, again, you know, if you really just get the definitions of words like authentic and mindfulness, the definitions are pretty straightforward and simple. You know, authentic means real and genuine. You know, it's like the real deal, the real McCoy, you know, something that is actually real. You know, we're eating an apple, and we know we're eating an apple. It's real. It's genuine. We don't have to go, is this a banana? No, it's not. It's an apple. We know it, okay? But when it comes to ourselves, we oftentimes have so much, what I say in my book, fear, insecurity, and doubt about who we are. You know, we have an inner critic. We have a voice within us that tells us things that are not very supportive of who we are. It tells us we're not good enough. It tells us that we're not lovable. It tells us that we're never going to be good at something. It tells us that we're not going to ever meet our soulmate. You know, that is really feeding the inauthentic self, because we don't come into the world like that. We come, in my opinion, into the world as pure beings, as these very special, unique, divine beings. And along the way on the life journey, we start to tell ourselves a lot of not very nice things about who we are. And before we know it, we've lost sight of our most authentic self, our true essence, our true nature, or what also can be called our Buddha nature. It's the aspects of ourselves that are most real. Yes, we have characteristics, and we have aspects of ourselves we may not like or love, And what we do is we start to pretend that we don't have them, and we start to take on an identity or a persona that isn't real because we're so afraid we're not going to be loved or liked or acknowledged for who we really are. So I really go into depth about that in Live True, about how to sort of strip away, how to lift the veils of the inauthentic self so that we can return to our most true, authentic self, which is so worthy of being loved.
Or describe your book the way it's set up for our listeners, please. It's got 30 chapters, and each chapter has a different issue to talk about.
Okay, well, I break it down really into four parts. The first part being time and how we can really honor time, how we can really be present. And how I break it down is into the different time forms, like the present, the past, the future, today. And I even include something called this magic moment, because then no matter what time frame you're in, past, present, or future, moments are magical if we make them as such. And part two is understanding. So we understand ourselves better and why we can get into our own way, you know, and so that we don't live authentically in the present moment. And I break it down into chapters like wholeness and consciousness and coexistence and, you know, really, you know, guiding the reader into getting to know themselves better. Do you know, so many people are really afraid to do the inner journey. They're afraid to find out about themselves because they're so afraid they're going to find out parts of themselves that, what, are so unbearable to know that you have characteristics and aspects of yourself like every other human being on the planet. We have insecurities. We have doubts. We have fears. Be kind to yourself. Be loving. That's what this book guides you through, a better understanding of how to accept all of who you are. And part three is living, how to live in the present moment with love and acceptance and truth and honesty and authenticity, and to be more compassionate and to really know what your purpose is as your most authentic self, and to be able to define your intentions daily, and by also not always just putting yourself first, but learning how to be in service to others. And part four is the realization of what does your reality mean to you? How are you manifesting your reality? How are you manifesting your destiny? How do you really actualize the self so that you can understand self-realization and what you're doing here and what you are meant to do in this lifetime? And then to declare your I am, do you know, which is really the sacredness of declaring who you are to yourself and to the universe. And then really, ultimately, being able to return to the great knowing of oneness, and that we are not separate, and that it is really the understanding of oneness that keeps us connected to what we're doing here.
Okay. Now, when I was looking through your book, one of the first pages of the book I was interested in, it was a quote by Edith Wharton. She said, "I shan't be lonely now. I was lonely, I was afraid, but the emptiness and darkness are gone. When I turn back into myself now, I'm like a child going at night into a room where there's always a light." And you said, or Esther, I suppose that means this book is dedicated to Esther?
Yes, my sister who passed away.
About Esther.
Mm-hmm. She was my inspiration for this book. I wrote this book shortly after she passed away, and I think when I know I spoke about her, I think, on your first show, and she suffered from mental illness, and when she passed away, I felt as though her spirit was guiding me to write Live True, because I wanted people to understand what it means to value the moments of their life and not to waste them. You know, it's when we lose a beloved that it really, really crystallizes the value and the meaning of this life, you know. And I say in Live True, who are we to waste the moments of our lives? You know, are we only meant to celebrate the moments of our lives that bring us joy and happiness? No. Let us face all the moments of our lives with courage and dignity, and even the difficult ones that can be some of our greatest teachers?
Well, I'm sure that Edith is looking down and smiling.
Oh, thank you, Wynn. That's beautiful.
In your introduction, you have a quote by one of my favorite psychologists, Carl Jung. Your vision will become clear only when you can look into your own heart. Who looks outside dreams, who looks inside awakes. What could you say to expand on that?
That is also one of my most favorite quotes of Carl Jung. I myself am a Jungian analyzed person, so I have tremendous reverence for psychologist Carl Jung, who really, his teachings really illumined my psychospiritual path. And so I really pay homage to him for being a great guide for me on the psychospiritual journey. You know, I do believe that the inner journey, which is so much of what Carl Jung wrote about, you know, the inner journey, and that is the journey within, and that when we look outside, which is beautiful to do, we can look and dream of what is possible. But it is really the inner journey, the examined life, that we come to know ourselves, and we come to awaken to who we really are, which I call the authentic self, do you know? But we must be willing to look within, and again, and I talk about it in depth and Live True, that it's scary for a lot of people, do you know? And the fear that they have of knowing themselves better really stops them from going deeper within. And I think the quote from Jung, you know, says it so succinctly, that it really is the inner journey that enables us to awaken to not only a greater understanding of who we are, but a greater understanding of what this life is about.
Okay, so in your introduction, you said, this moment that you are in right now, the present moment, is the most important moment that there is. Yesterday is come and gone, tomorrow is not here yet. It is this present moment that matters the most. And if we value the moments of our lives, we will want to make the most of each one and not let any moment go by without having lived it as truthfully and as authentically as we can. Well, that seems to summarize what you're talking about in a couple sentences.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing that. That really sums it up. It's like the agreement that we make with ourselves, that I am choosing to really value this moment that I'm alive in and that is uniquely my own, do you know? And it is so true about the moments that we are in. They are unlike any moment before it and any moment after it. And in this moment right now, if we have true gratitude for being alive in the moments of our lives, then each moment will seem so much richer for us. And we won't look at the moments of our lives as wishing for them to hurry and go. Because I feel that it is at the end of our lives that we will be so faced with not wanting to have wasted a single moment before we take our last breath. You know, that we want to value each and every moment because they are so precious.
Tolle wrote about living in the moment, in the now. Is this the same philosophy that you have?
Yes, you know, it is. It's living in the present moment, you know, and there have been many philosophers and theosophists and theologians and, you know, wonderful spiritual teachers that have spoken of it throughout time, you know, about being present and valuing the moment, that they are so sacred, that they are holy, sacred, and divine, if we look at life that way, and that each and every moment is a gift, do you know? And I know that it's not so easy to sustain that feeling because life has difficulties. I understand that. You know, we can't be in a heightened, exalted state all the time, but that's what mindfulness does. It helps us. It helps us return to the moment with appreciation and gratitude, so that if we are to slip out of a moment or to forget how valuable a moment is for us, it gently reminds us. I say that it gives us a gentle push or a nudge, you know, and sometimes even a harsh shove. Life can go, wake up, wake up, you know, be in the moment, be awake, value this moment. You know, sometimes we get rude awakenings, you know, we can even get broadsided. And, you know, you don't want to wait for that to happen. You don't want to wait for something to just shake you to your core, to make you value the moments of your life, do you know? You want to be able to value them when you're healthy and when you're not in a life-threatening situation. But you want to value them from the minute you wake up.
Right. Let's take a commercial break. Where do they get your book? And tell me about your website.
I find, you know, my book is available on all the book outlets, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. They're carried in books. It's carried in bookstores, or if you have a local bookstore, you can order it. I feel Amazon is so fast. You order it on Amazon, you can get it a day or two later, and you can get it on Kindle and read it immediately.
Right. How about your website?
My website is Aura, O-R-A, Nadrich, N-A-D-R-I-C-H.com.
Great. Now I'm going to get into one of the chapters of your book, chapter 22, Compassion. And you have an affirmation that precedes that chapter. It is, I am authentic. I live in harmony with who I am. I am true to my nature. And you know as well as I do that positive affirmations can change the way that you think about everything in the universe. And if you repeat affirmations and try to take them into your mind, that it will change your mind. So is this the best affirmation for being authentic?
I think it's very, very connected to authenticity. I think when we are living authentic and when we are living aligned with our true nature, I think that compassion is so automatic. You know, it's like you can tell that you're in harmony with who you really are, and then you're in harmony with nature, and you're functioning out of that true state of being, pure being, and you can really live your life guided by those affirmations. You know, and that's a beautiful way to go through life. You know, it's wonderful to remind ourselves, and I think this chapter on compassion really drives that point home, and that, you know, you don't want to be living your life just always thinking about your needs, your wants, your desires, although I encourage us to be very clear about what our healthy wants are and desires are, to be clear about what those are. But when you really drop into a much more less what I call me-centric way of being, that it's not just always about us, we start to really think about others. And by thinking about others, our hearts widen even more. And it really enhances our level of compassion. And it's just such a, as I said, beautiful way to go through life.
You have a quote from the Dalai Lama in this chapter, and it says, love and compassion are necessities, not luxuries. Without them, humanity cannot survive. That's a pretty powerful statement.
I agree you're picking some of my favorite quotes. Absolutely. I mean, if that's the bottom line, if we just know that, if we just know that it's just a given, that love and compassion are just the way we have to go through life, you know, that we don't settle for less than that, then we are contributing to humanity's well-being and ultimately our survival. You know, we're connected. We're all connected. You know, if we're only thinking about ourselves, then we're not, as I said, thinking about others. And if we come from a place of love and compassion, then we are really in service to the betterment of humanity.
I want to give you an example of that. Back years ago when I had a family practice, I was a family practitioner, people would come in all the time saying, I'm so depressed, I want some Prozac or something like that. And my initial response is, I don't think that the reason you're depressed is because you're low on a drug. Now, take this prescription. Every day for the next 30 days, find someone who is worse off than you are, that you come into contact with, and compassionately do something to help that person, not for wanting anything back from that person, and then come back at the end of 30 days. And you know what happened? Most of those people came back after 30 days, and they weren't depressed, and they didn't want a drug anymore.
I know. So, I agree with you, Wynn, and I think that if we started this work from the ground up, if we started our days with a new way of looking at life, you know, in gratitude, with present awareness, and being appreciative of every moment that we're alive in, and practicing mindfulness, which I wholeheartedly believe should be taught to children in schools, then we won't let ourselves go so far off track that we become so mired in negative and fear-based thinking and get so anxious and depressed. And I'm not talking about chemical imbalances. I'm not a doctor, and I know every human being is different. But we have an opioid crisis going on right now that is epidemic. And what are people numbing out from? What is it that they're numbing out from? What is it that they don't want to feel? You know, how far have we come to that we don't even know how to administer to ourselves properly, that we've so lost our way? You know, it's sad. And maybe if we are able to connect to this appreciation and this gratitude and come from a place of compassion, we will find that our thinking changes. And I agree with your theory, do you know, that if you're just so busy contemplating your own belly button and so worried about, you know, not getting yourself needs happened, you know, fulfilled all the time, then you're going to be just circling that drain, and you're going to feel very sorry for yourself, and it's hard to get out from under that rut.
Yes. So I'm going to talk about with you about purpose next, but I wanted to say that since you brought up the issue of the opioid crisis, that hundreds of people every day are dying in our country from opioid or narcotic overdoses. Mm-hmm. And it's on everybody's mind. Mm-hmm. Now, it's important, but drugs are not the only addictions that people have that are killing them. Mm-hmm. You know? And I've been helping people find a way to rid themselves of their addictions for the last 30 years. And my book, Freedom from Addiction, and then the number 3, probably has the highest cure rate in the country. You can take the therapy that's in the book and do it at home, and you don't even have to take any time off from work. And it gives you a better cure rate from 30 different addictive processes than going to a $60,000, 30-day spa-type inpatient setup. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to give you in the show notes a link that takes you to my podcast, which is called Freedom from Addiction, and it can be heard all over the world 24 hours a day. And if you want to know anything about addiction, I would suggest you go over there. It's free. Mm-hmm. You can listen to 100 programs on the subject. But one of the things that I so strongly believe in is that having a purpose, knowing what it is and trying to pursue it, is one of the most valuable things that a person can do to keep themselves from the bad side effects of addictive behaviors. So let's talk about purpose, and you can get quotes from just about anybody on purpose these days. You have one in your book that I like. It says, the mystery of human existence lies not in just staying alive, but in finding something to live for. Mm-hmm. And so using that to get started on purpose, why don't you give us a little insight into how important purpose, life purpose, is for a person to have a totally better life?
Well, you know, purpose is really, you know, what can get us up in the morning. And I say in the book, it doesn't have to be that your purpose is that you have to find a cure for cancer. You know, that isn't the case. You know, some people feel like they have nothing important to contribute. And that, again, goes back to our thinking. You know, that goes back to our negative thoughts that we hold as true, you know. And I wrote a whole book around that called Says Who, for challenging negative and fear-based thoughts. So if you ask a lot of people, they might say, well, I don't really know what my purpose is. You know, I'm just kind of going along in my life. I'm sort of going through the motions. And a lot of people do, and it's sad. And I think that many people haven't given themselves the opportunity to even find out what their purpose is. So therefore, they're at a loss, you know. And I think that if you really connect to an understanding of yourself, and, you know, oftentimes what I do with clients is we kind of go back in time to a time where they remember things that made them happy. You know, you could be going back into childhood. And, you know, it could be something like rolling down a hillside or laying on the ground in the park and looking up at the sky and watching the clouds move across, you know, the sky and seeing how beautiful that is. You know, one might say, well, what does that have to do with my purpose? How about having a purpose just to wake up in the morning and feel that you deserve to be alive? And then decide, how can you best utilize yourself out in the world? How can you show up? Again, this goes back to mindfulness, about finding out how you can be who you really are in all the moments of your life. You know, there's so many people that hate their jobs. There's so many people that are so unhappy in what they do. Now, I want to be realistic here. I want to say there are a lot of people that go, well, yeah, I don't like my job, but I got to put food on the table for my kids. And I get that. I respect that. You know, so what I say is find other things other than your work that might give you pleasure, so that when you're not working, you can balance your life in a way that makes you feel that your life is purposeful, meaning that you're doing something that you like and even love. You know, it can be difficult. Life is difficult. There's no doubt about it. But we want to be able to find that delicate balance. And I talk about that a lot in this chapter. There's some people that know exactly what their purpose is. There's some people that have the means to fulfill their purpose. And then there are people that don't make a lot of money, and they might be knitting, you know, blankets for people in third world countries, and that feels purposeful for them. So what I propose to the listener is to find out or connect to or remember, if you have forgotten, you pleasure, what satisfies your heart and soul, and follow that, and it will lead you to your purpose for sure.
That's very insightful, and I'd like to make a couple comments. Back some years ago, I interviewed Larry King on my talk show, and among other things that I learned from him, one of them was I asked him, Larry, what is your purpose in life? And he said, well, you know, and he could have said a lot of different things because he interviewed 35,000 people at that point. He said, my purpose is to do the best job that I can raising my four boys. Mm-hmm. And if somebody to the statue of Larry King feels that raising your kids is your life purpose, then I wouldn't put that down. There's so many things that people think, well, that's not all that important, but I don't think that that's the way to look at it. I think the way to look at it is, if you feel like that it's important to you, it's your passion and everything, then it's just as important as anybody else's purpose.
Absolutely. I mean, if somebody said, and I didn't say this in Live True, but if someone said, you know, my purpose in life is to make one person smile a day, okay, that really touches me, you know, to think like, I would look at that person and say, wow, that is really meaningful. You know, that's why I say in Live True, I've had people that have been in service businesses, whether they're waiters or they're taxi drivers, you know, today it would be, you know, Uber and Lyft drivers or whatever. It could be your gardener. It could be somebody who's preparing your food, you know, and they come up to you with a smile on their face. I've had people that just come up to you in their job, and they're so friendly, and they're so present, and they're so warm that you can just tell they're happy inside, do you know? And I talk about find your happy place, and that's not McDonald's, you know? Happy place is that place within that gives you pleasure. Find that. You're worthy. You have a purpose here. You've been born. You're alive. Your life is meaningful. Your life matters, do you know? And if we look at one another like that, then we will mirror back to each other that we matter, and therefore our life is worthy of a purpose. Do you know, we have to really stop and recognize and look at each other and mirror back to one another that we matter.
You said that you run into a lot of people who don't know what their purpose is and want some advice on how to find it. And so I'm going to give you my thoughts for my book, Freedom from Addiction 3, and that find your purpose through prayer and meditation. Your prayer would be something like this. If I didn't have to worry about what anybody thought, not my parents, not my wife, my husband, my children, not society in general, and if I had no limitations, neither financial, educational, nor any other kind, what would I want to accomplish in this life that would make me the happiest, the most contented, and best justify my existence? Now, if you say that prayer over and over again, you will get an answer. It probably is not going to come verbally, but you'll have a feeling. And whatever that feeling is for you the truth at the time. So whatever that feeling is, go do it. And if you can only do it an hour a day because you've got a job, that's great. Do
right.
as much as you can. And you'll find out that your life will start going towards the purpose and possibly away from what you're doing right now. So I think that finding your purpose is one of the most important things that you can do to make yourself a better life, and service to others is generally the type of purpose that most people find the most rewarding.
Absolutely, and it's true, Wynn, and I think what you do in your book and what I do similarly is that we ask people to ask themselves those questions. Do you know, I mean, I say in Live True that so many people live their lives never asking themselves how they're doing or if they're happy or not, because they don't feel they should or have a right to, do you know? And when we ask ourselves those questions, like what you just even mentioned in your book, you know, whether it be through asking questions or it be through prayer, do you know, who am I? You know, if you want God to work through you and or whatever divine presence, you know, resonates for you so that you can go out into the world and be in service, you know, you're asking the question. You're asking the question to know. And by knowing, you can then do. And it's, you know, that's really how we can help ourselves, is by questioning. You know, how can I be true to who I am? How can I be in service to others? Do you know, how can I live my life as an example of someone who goes out each day with a smile on my face and so that I can lift the spirits of someone else by them looking at me and looking into my eyes and seeing me smile. Do you know, if we all walked around like that, boy, what a better world this would be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have a Twitter feed. If you've never tried Twitter, I'm going to ask you to try it. It's twitter.com, and then look up my Twitter feed, which is at Hugo the Artist, because in my spare time, that's what I am. But at any rate, every day I put up some quote from some person that will enrich your life. And if you just go there every day and get the quote of the day and think about it, you will over time have a totally different life. And that's at Hugo the Artist. But I just wanted to throw that in because I forget about telling about things that's going on in these programs a lot. Now, I'm interviewing Aura Nadrich on her book, Live True, A Mindfulness Guide to Authenticity, which I totally think that you ought to get a copy of because it's going to be really something important for you in your life. And you can go to Amazon.com. That's the easiest way to order it. There's other ways, but that's what I would do. And Nora has written a great second book. I believe her first book was Says Who, is that right?
Yes, Says Who. How one simple question can change the way you think forever. And I remember having that wonderful interview with you back then on my first book.
Yeah, I'm thinking what comes to mind when you ask that question, Says Who, that a lot of people are living their lives based on what they think other people are saying about them. Is that right?
Yes, and that's a really good point to make, when, especially at this time when we are so at the effect of our devices, our gadgets, social media, you know, what are your social media numbers? Wow, I mean, we're living at a time where people are being accepted based on numbers. So, you know, with the generations, you know, coming up, boy, it's not going to be so easy for them. They've got to transcend that, you know, that getting a strong sense of who you are, that's why the authentic self is so important to know, so that you can stand tall and proud of who you are, that it doesn't matter what other people think of you. And you're not just waking up each day trying to compete with other people's social media platforms. You know, I work a lot with millennials, and, you know, they really have their work cut out for them because, you know, this is a time very different than when we were growing up that, yes, we had, you know, hoops to jump through too to prove ourselves, but it's gotten really, you know, to the point where you are being tested even more so today on how to stay true to who you are and be okay with who you are and think that you're enough.
You know, since you brought up the subject of media, social media and everything, I want to make a statement. There's over 30 different types of addictions that I treat. And when I say that I cure addictions, the first thing they say, oh, you take care of drugs, alcohol, and tobacco. Well, I just want you to know that, yes, I do, but that isn't anywhere near the most prevalent addictions in the country. And in my viewpoint today, the most prevalent addiction in the country is screens addiction.
Absolutely.
People are on their screens 4 to 5 hours per day. Now, what would our society be like if people were drunk 4 to 5 hours a day, or they were out taking a smoke break 4 to 5 hours a day, or they were shooting up with narcotics 4 to 5 hours a day?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in the country? Well, it's nowhere near like what's happening with screen addiction.
Absolutely.
So, you know.
Such a good point, Wynn. I'm so glad you're bringing it up. And I'm really happy to hear that you're talking about the many types of addictions. You know, I've worked in addiction area myself, and, you know, that's why I help a lot of people through understanding their thoughts better so they can understand why their thoughts create behavior, that create actions that can be very destructive, you know, and to reach out for things like drugs and alcohol or even, you know, addiction to social media and whatever, to make themselves feel whole when they got to do the repair within, do you know? And it is very scary. We don't even know what long-term effects this is going to have. You know, you see toddlers today. You know, when my kids were young, I put books in front of them, and I put paints and paper. You know, today kids have smartphones. You see kids in strollers, and they're on iPads and smartphones. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Well,
at 3 years old, the child is playing on this technology. Now, I know that exists. Again, I like to consider all things and that this is real. You know, technology is real. We have it. But if we don't know how to self-regulate, we're in serious trouble.
They had a piece on Good Morning America this morning showing two-year-olds spending hours on their iPods or whatever. And I thought, this is just getting too bad. When you're starting a life of addiction when you're two, and your parents are condoning it and letting you do it because it means that they don't have to parent as much if they put you in front of a screen, it makes me very sad.
It makes me sad too, Wynn, and I'm glad you're bringing it up. It's serious. This is, again, you know, we mentioned the opioid crisis. This is a crisis. This is very serious business. And I think that a lot of people are at a loss. I know a lot of parents. I've coached parents. They're at a loss is to know what to do because they don't know how to really help their kids through these problems. But, you know, we all need to work together. You know, yes, there are professionals, and there are, you know, professionals in the area of addiction. And, you know, the area of addiction and technology is a relatively new area. We're discovering more as we go along here, but we have a lot more to learn.
I was curious, Sora. I know that you counsel people in your hometown and everything. Do you counsel people at different areas of the country by telephone?
I do. I've had people from all over, international clients. I've Skyped. I do phone sessions. So it's something I've done for a long time, yes.
Well, you have a lot to bring to the table, so how do they get in touch with you if they want to be your counseling client?
Well, they can go on my website. I have a submission email, info at the IFTT. I get a lot of submission letters where people send me inquiries asking me about my coaching business, or they can also just directly email me to aura@auralifecoach.com. That's the best way for them to reach me. And I get, you know, all from all over the world. I have people who send me in submission inquiries.
Okay. Well, we've had a really delightful discussion today, don't you think?
I am not at all surprised, Wynn. I knew that we were going to have another wonderful conversation like we did the last time.
Yeah. So I'm eager to talk to you again when your third book comes out. But
thank you, Wynn.
I just
started my third book, I am happy to say.
Do you have a title yet?
I don't. And I want to just sort of not put too much ahead of myself here because I'm so busy. My book has just been out for a couple weeks.
Uh-huh.
So I'm you know, talk about being present. I'm present with Live True right now. That's where I need to be. But I know we'll talk again when my third book is complete.
Exactly. Okay, so we've been at this almost 50 minutes, and I've talked a lot, generally a lot more than I normally do, but do you have anything else that you have a burning desire to say to people listening to your program all over the world before we wind it up?
Well, I want to just quickly mention that I'm doing a wonderful workshop this coming weekend. There's still some spots left at 1440 Multiversity, which is an immersion program environment in the Redlands in Northern California. It's just a beautiful place. I'll be teaching a workshop with my colleague, Dr. Ron Alexander, called Mind, Mood, and Happiness, Transforming the Self. So a lot of what we were talking about, a lot of what is in my book will be in this course. And if you're interested in finding more about it, you can go to multiversity.org. So I just want to put that out there, because we've got a great group coming, and we've got people coming from all over. So if that's something that you want to find out about, please look into it. And what I really want to say and end this beautiful conversation that we've had today is that, you know, take that step towards yourself. And that's really what you're doing, is you're taking that step towards you. You're saying yes to you, to really come to know yourself better. And I will tell you this, that who you will come to know, you will find so many surprises when you, you know, embark on the mindfulness journey and the inner journey of self. And I really commend you for taking that step towards awakening to your most beautiful divine being that you are.
Thank you, Nora Natridge. Live True, a mindfulness guide to authenticity. Now go out and get it from Amazon or wherever you can find it. Great book. Thanks again, Nora.
Thank you, Wynn.